Task Committee will please come to order. We have a quorum. We have Representative Hanley, we have Representative Thompson, Co-Chair Copeland, and I'm Max Gruenberg. We have four bills that are technically scheduled for today. We held over House Bill 497 relating to child custody and a briefing on House Bill 98, which is in the Senate. Those two bills we will reschedule. We did not finish the 497 bill yesterday, and when Co-Chair Copeland and I reschedule, we will deal with that. And House Bill 98, the briefing, will also have to reschedule. We have two bills we will hear today. Senate Bill 263, an act relating to disqualification for certain state loan programs for failure to pay child support, and House Bill 461, relating to water quality enhancement grants. It would be my intent, unless anybody objects on the committee or any witness has a specific problem, to take the bills in that order. Does anyone have a problem? Hearing none, that will be the order. I see we have Senator Fakes, the bill sponsor, here to testify on Senate Bill 263. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 263? Mrs. Gall, fine. I would tend to take the sponsor of the bill first and then you. Do either of you have a problem with proceeding in that manner? Hearing none, Senator, the floor is yours. Would you like
this
to come up?
Very much like a court. You can tell I'm dealing with an attorney. Good afternoon.
We move them in and we move them out.
We have three attorneys in the
committee. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Copeland, and Chairman Gruenberg. My name is Jan Fakes. I represent South Anchorage, Hillside of Midtown, and Campbell Lake in the State Senate. You have before you Senate Bill 263 in your packet. You have sectional of the bill. What the bill does is it makes a statement that if you are in arrearage for your child support payment, then one of the few things that we can do to you besides the normal beating you on the head and sending you your nasty little yellow slips and trying to make you feel guilty because your child is suffering, we can do something positive, and that's to deny the use of a state loan if you are in arrearage to your child, which means that we are putting the child support payments first priority on the use and the time of that person, and if that person isn't willing to make that commitment to pay their child support payments, then the state will deny them the access to the various loan programs, and that includes the student loan program. And I haven't heard any debate or negative debate about this bill except in relationship to the student loan program. And I think you have to make the decision: is who is most important in this case, and what is your priority? Is the priority those payments, those back arrearages due to that child, or is the priority the person who wants to get a student loan program? And my feeling is the priority should be the money due that child, because it's a debt to that child, and that child, I feel, deserves to receive those payments. Now, we're talking about arrearage payments. We're not talking about because someone owes their child support payments if they can't have a loan. We're talking about people who have failed over through judgments of the court, through various kinds of manipulations to pay their child the money that's due them. And I'd like to point out something, and I hope you got it in your packet. It's a new piece of information that we sent you dated February 24th of this year. HFC began to do this recently. They decided during the interim that this was a good idea. They did it within their own regulations and with the board to adopt the principles of this bill in its loan application procedure. And lo and behold, we had payments due, some of the children of Alaska, up to $10,000 each because the parent in arrearage wanted an AHFC home loan bad enough to come up with, miraculously, the money owed their child. You have, as of April 2nd of last year, 7,198 cases of total arrearages balancing over $30 million. Today it's somewhere between $30 million and $50 million because the department is going over a new computer. We can't get you the exact number of cases and the exact dollar amount of arrearages. But last April 2nd it was 7,198 cases and a little over $30 million. This year there are a 30% increase. There's 8,200 cases. You have 8,200 cases in arrearage. You have a total of 10,000 cases in collections, and you have somewhere between $33 million and $50 million in arrearage. And we just can't. I apologize to the committee for not being able to have that precise number for you, but they're in the middle of that computer conversion. So I think what you've got here is you've got a policy call to say, Are the payments due the children of the state important enough to deny the parent who owes that money access to the state loan portfolio? And then you have a success case out there. You have HFC who successfully started to do this. They're working with the department. They've got close coordination in their computers. AHFC hasn't delayed the loan process. They've been able to share computer tapes. They've been able to share with the child support division this information, and people are paying. So they've been able to pay back some money that is overdue to the support for those children. So I think what you're going to find is the interaction between the agencies is going to be good. All of them are computerized. I think this will allow the child support division better access into some of these agencies for information on property of the recipient and those kinds of things. And I think the end result is going to be more support for the children of Alaska that need it most. And I don't want to say there's going to be a decrease in aid to families with dependent children, but I think that would have to be one of the benefits that would come out of this in the long run. That if that $30 to $50 million is paid back to those children that owe them, there has to be some sort of decrease in AFCC payments somewhere down the line. But I think that's hard to calculate, and that would be hard to really justify a number amount on there. But I think logic would dictate that that's got to be so. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will answer any questions of the committee.
Thank you, Senator. Co-Chair Copeland.
Thank you. I would like to congratulate the Senator for figuring out an easy way to get some leverage on these cases, which are so difficult to follow up and draw up a very simple and effective bill. I do know, you said in the conversation in your presentation that there was some discussion on the student loan program. You do have in the backup a comment that Dr. Romsberg of the Post-Secondary Commission says that it would work well with their system.
It would work well with the system. It's a policy call, sir. Several people in the Senate felt that why the student loan means that you're going to better people. People want better education in order to get a better job, in order to make their child support payments. That argument has some validity in it, but it's just simply not my priority. To me, the priority is that child, and I would like that money owed back to that child. And if one way is to stop that student loan payment or student loan program, to me, if someone is going to be in arrears to a child support payment that has been mandated by the judge, that there's counseling involved, that if you have problems, the judge will come back and renegotiate with you. In other words, if you're not willing to pay the payment due your child, what makes you so convinced that that person's going to pay back the state his student loan program? So I feel that any person who owes his child money is going to be the likely candidate who's also going to walk away from the student loan.
Did they cite any cases? I mean, or is this hypothetical?
It's hypothetical.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions? I have a few, Senator. They fall into two categories. And I don't have a problem at all with the concept, but I do need to know a little more about how you envision this working. And those would be my first categories. I gather from looking at Holly Plug's fiscal note and the follow-up letter from her dated April 4, 1985, that what she would envision is an inquiry coming from the lending agency to her. Is this person behind? Then they would respond with a notice to the person, to the agency. And apparently, according to her fiscal note, one notice per year. Now, would that, I'm not sure where that falls in. Is she planning to send a notice to the obligor or a notice to the lending agency or what?
Okay, it's my understanding that the people in arrearage get notice every month on their payment. They know. And the way it works with HFC is you get a little notice every month, and you either get a clean slip or a dirty slip. And what HFC does is if you're just willing to take that notice in, that everything is wonderful with you and child support, that's just stapled onto the application, and the application goes through, and there's no problem at all. If you are in arrearage, HFC just simply says, when you bring us a little slip of paper to show you're paid up, then we will process your loan, otherwise everything is stopped. And that's the way I envision it working. The division keeps very accurate records. They have everyone in their computer. They can call up someone with just a few little beatings of their keyboard, and they know instantly whether someone's in arrearage or not, and they simply send that notice to the agency, or they have that list to the agency, and the agency can then decide to proceed or not proceed based on that notice. So it's a simple mechanical process that the computer allows us to do. HFC started by doing it by hand, and now they're up to speed on it, but they've been very successful with it. But because the division is totally computerized, it's just not a difficult thing for them to comply with the various agencies.
Okay. I wasn't aware, and I may just not know it, that they send the obligor a notice every month from the Child Support Enforcement Division. I didn't know that.
Okay, it's in my testimony. Hang on just a second. Agencies in finding folks that are in arrears so they can be notified.
Frankly, I didn't realize, and I've had a number of clients in the situation where they're dealing with the Child Support Enforcement Division, but I didn't know that they notified them every month like a bank.
Okay, it says the division sends a monthly statement to all absent parents which verifies their current obligation status. Now, we can verify that with the division, but that was my understanding, and that's in my original testimony.
Okay. Then let's follow the thing
and
first.
So that's why when they get their monthly status, they can just take
sure,
that down to the lending agency and say, see, I'm current.
Suppose there is, for one reason or another, somebody who has not been located, or they may have some records that are behind or inaccurate. I have represented people on both sides of this, and sometimes they have had terrific problems in dealing with the Child Support Enforcement Division. I've had, matter of fact, one of my clients now, the Child Support Enforcement Division took this person's money and has refused to return it, basically. And everybody's agreed, and it's a quite a bureaucracy they have there. And I'm not blaming anybody, but this just happens to be a fact of life. Suppose somebody is caught in a bureaucratic situation, and and this really gets into my second, the second area of questioning, Senator, and they have a valid defense, and let's say the custodial parent and the Child Support Enforcement Division say prima facie that this person owes this money, but the person says, no, I don't, and they're in either an administrative procedure to adjudicate this, or they're even in court. How do you envision this loan working in the meantime? If there's a genuine bona fide dispute,
then I feel that the first priority is the child, and the child's welfare is my first priority, and I say we don't get the loan until the court decides.
Third, if we're dealing here with the Child Support Enforcement Division, a number of cases don't go through the Child Support Enforcement Division.
Yes, they do.
No.
The court decides, and then the court turns that judgment over to Child Support Enforcement.
Not unless there's a request by the obligee. It's only those cases where the obligee requests. It used to be the way you're saying, and the obligee, the custodial parent, had to say they didn't want it. And then the legislature...
Those folks would not be included in this. They would fall through that crack.
Okay. So we need then to make certain that this is language is limited to only those cases that are in the Child Support Enforcement Division. That's not the way it's written now.
But there would be no way of knowing, there'd be no way of getting the other cases.
Yeah,
if they're not in the system, they couldn't be in the computer and we wouldn't know about it.
I understand, but we have to make that clear in the language of the bill, because technically under the language of the bill, the lending agencies would say, it's our duty, since you're talking here about child support obligations, and that's the language you use here, that we have to, if you have any kids, we have to call or locate the custodial parent and ascertain independently or something. I'm surprised nobody's raised that.
Nobody's raised that.
Okay, I think we do need to take a look at that, and I was concerned about that.
How would they do that? There's no record.
No, I think you're right. I think that we have to limit it to people who are in the agency, but the language of the bill must make that clear.
Yeah, but you, okay, that's fine. I have no objection to that. But Representative Gruenberg, logic would tell you that there's no way the other folks could be in this bill because there's no way of knowing who they are, and the banks or whatever, or the state lending agencies aren't going to set up to investigate every single loan applicant who may not be, they're going to call child support enforcement, they're going to say, no, they're not in our system. They're not going to run out and hire a special investigator to see if this guy has child care.
But conceivably, and I'm concerned about how this will be implemented by a variety of agencies in a variety of different regulations. And I can see very legitimately some legal counsel somewhere giving an agency advice that what you have to do is, under this bill, you have to, on your form, indicate, ask the borrower, do you have any court or agency imposed support obligations? And if they do, then if they check the yes box, for example, they would indicate, is this going through the Child Support Enforcement Division, yes or no, and if not, the name and address of the obligee. In other words, I can see, under the literal language of this, the way it's written, Senator, that agencies would feel bound under the law to inquire, even if this is not going through the division, even if it's going strictly to the mother herself, for example.
Okay. I would want, if there's a mother out there who is dumb enough not to go through the courts, can't imagine.
There are lots, believe me.
Then I want that arrearage payment caught up someplace. And I don't think it's fair, but because that person had one, didn't go through the courts for the first time, somewhere along the line the system should catch up with that person. So I would be opposed to just saying, just through child support enforcement. If there's an arrearage child payment due out there, I'd like to catch them.
That is going to have an obvious impact on the agency and on the process, because I don't know what the figures are, but from my own practice, there are many, many people who don't go through the division, and I don't know what, I would say it's probably less than 50%, but I would say it's more than 25% who don't go through the division at all.
Okay, Representative Gruenberg, I just care about the kids whose money is owed to them, whether the parents went through the system or not. The bottom line is the money is owed the kid. And I think what I'd like to do is track that parent, whoever it may be, to pay the money that they owe their child. And I don't think the state should be rewarding them with a state loan because they're sly enough to figure a system out to avoid paying their child support payments. What I feel about. But the committee may do whatever, and there'll be an opportunity down the line maybe to argue it differently.
Sure. Representative Thompson.
Isn't it possible, Mr. Chairman, that kind of concern could be addressed through regulation? Is it really necessary to have it in the language of the bill?
The way it's written now, the way the bill is drafted now, is it says, and the language is the same in each section, past due child support obligation. And the way I would interpret this, just from the literal language, since it doesn't limit it through to the division or anything else, it's going to require an independent inquiry. And I'm not saying it has to be anything extensive. I'm saying that they will have to ask the borrower in each case and have it on their forms, like I indicated a few minutes ago. Do you have any dependents for whom you owe a duty of support? And if it's not going through the division, there will have to be some way for the agency to determine whether those are in fact current. Because it is sort of, the way the thing is set up now, a condition precedent. You can't get the loan unless you're current. So they have got to determine whether the person is current before they can grant the loan.
And you don't feel that could be addressed in regulation?
I think it could be addressed in regulations, and I think it would have a definite impact on the way this whole system would work.
And I wanted to. Gruenberg, would you want somebody to get a state loan if they weren't current in their child support payment?
No, I'm not saying I would. I'm saying that, I'm not arguing with you or the other members of the committee. What I am concerned about is the way this thing is going to work. Because let me carry this one step further, and this is what really happens. You have two groups: the people who go through the agency and the people who don't go through the agency. And the people who don't go through the agency often don't keep records. And you may have somebody alleging, particularly somebody who is, in fact, the place where this is going
to... Don't you have to go to court to get a divorce?
Of course.
Okay. And if there are children involved, doesn't the judge get involved in this?
Quite often not. Quite often it's like a no-fault dissolution, and they just sign off on it.
I had a no-fault dissolution, and I had to go to the judge.
But the judge isn't involved except to sign the decree. Now, this is long afterwards. This may be 10 years later.
Well, aren't the kids too old to get child support payments if it's 10 years later?
No, because you may have had a child who was an infant before, and that child is owed support for 18 years. And then the situation would be, you've got somebody who may not be on real good terms with the borrower and may not be particularly sympathetic to the borrower, and the children may not even be seeing the borrower, and she gets an inquiry from
the... You're just assuming it's the woman.
Okay, the man. The man. And that's a good point. And you may very well find that the person says, no, I am owed $10,000. I haven't gotten any money for Johnny for 10 years. And you have a 10-year statute of limitations on these back obligations. It's a judgment, and under the law of Alaska, it's a 10-year statute of limitations. There'd be a lot of money involved. And then there is a considerable dispute. And under this, the way it is written, they legally, the way I interpret it, they couldn't grant that loan until there had been a determination by somebody that this person was, in fact, current. And it could have, in a number of cases, considerable impact on agencies. And I want people to be aware of what the ramifications of this thing are. And I know, because, as you know, I deal with this as a profession. And I represent women and I represent men. And I just think it's important that we understand what they're
doing. I just want to maximize the collection.
I know.
For the money owed the children of the state. So however this committee wants to do that is fine. But my whole goal is to maximize the money to pay those children. And I don't think we should be rewarding folks with state loans when they owe their children money. However you legally want to do that,
thank you. Yeah, you may have anyway, I appreciate that. And thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Senator. Mrs. Gold.
My name is Elsie Gold, and Sherry Gold, who's a lobbyist for the Alaska Women's Lobby, has asked me to read her testimony because she can't be here today. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Alaska Women's Lobby would like to express its support for SB 263, limiting eligibility for state loans to those individuals who do not have delinquent child support obligations on record with the Child Support Enforcement Agency will encourage the payment of past due child support. We believe that child support arrearages should be brought current before any state loan is granted. If the borrower does not have sufficient funds to bring the account current, other financing may be obtained to pay for the delinquent child support, thereby qualifying the individual for the desired state loan. A person who ignores his or her responsibility for and we urge the swift passage of this legislation. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mrs. Gold. Yes. Thank you. Is there any? Is there any other testimony on this? Hearing none. What I propose to do, since I would like to take a day or two to look at this, is to hold this on the calendar. We will deal with this tomorrow, and either we'll have something or we'll have a date certain on it. And I like the bill, but I am concerned about some of the things. Another thing is you can have an obligation and not a judgment. And I'll talk with you. Anyway, I want to put some thought into this. So we will hold this on the calendar tomorrow unless any committee member has an objection.
I hope that you constitute the subcommittee.
I'm the subcommittee. I did it. I brought it on myself. Okay. Anyway, thank you very much. I note the presence of Representative Taylor. And the next bill we have is House Bill 461 by Representative Pierce. We have a number of people to testify on this bill. It would be my intent to take Representative Pierce as the bill sponsor first. Then we have Commissioner Ross, We have Gary Hayden. We have Steve Colt. Is there anyone else who desires to testify on House Bill 461? If not, it would be my intent to take the witnesses in that order. Is there any objection? Fine. Representative, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Greenberg, Chairman Kopanen, and members of the committee. I am Representative Drew Pierce. I share District 9, which is West Anchorage, with Representative Hanley. We share Fish Creek with Representative Greenberg, and Representative Hanley and I share the most scenic area of Campbell Creek in Anchorage. I come today before you as a prime sponsor of House Bill 461, an act relating to grants for water quality enhancement programs. I introduce this legislation. It's co-sponsored by members from Anchorage, including Representative Greenberg and Jeremy, and I appreciate that. It was introduced in response to an outcry from the public due to the critical health threats in Anchorage area streams. House Bill 461 addresses serious problems regarding water quality in streams, lakes, and other bodies of water, not just in Anchorage, but in all areas of the state. It's unacceptable to me that we are finding polluted streams, rivers, and lakes in Alaska and have no idea what the cause of the pollution is. State and local government and all the concerned people of the state must make correcting the situation a priority. As custodians of our natural environment, we owe it to ourselves and to our children to maintain the waters of this state in the highest quality condition reasonably possible. Anchorage streams are presently contaminated by a combination of surface water runoff, which carries chemicals into the streams of heavily populated areas, and also the deterioration of existing sewer lines that lie beneath those streams. This is evident by the discovery of high fecal coliform bacteria in the lower Campbell and Fish Creeks. Recent reports have indicated that many of Anchorage's streams are unfit for any recreational purpose, of any purpose at all, even wading. In fact, the pollution is so bad that last year the ever-popular Campbell Creek Classic had to be canceled due to the public health threat that it posed. In essence, the bill that's before you is authorizing legislation. It will add to an existing program that was created in the 1970s. It will be administered by the Department of Environmental Conservation. Presently, DEC has a 50-50 match program. The state provides grants to local governments for the purpose of constructing water and sewer systems and solid waste facilities. Let me point out at this time that any federal funds available for these grants and types of programs would be used first. We would not be displacing federal funds with state funds. My bill will simply expand the current program and allow grant funding for surface and subsurface water quality enhancement. I believe you will find that the 50-50 grant process is well known to both the municipalities and the Department of Environmental Conservation. The kind of program that I have proposed here would not be difficult to administer. It simply adds another avenue for the funds to be used in an already existing program. It would not require additional staffing, and it has a zero fiscal note from DEC. I believe that expanding the current program is preferable to instituting a new program. It encourages local participation and responsibility regarding water enhancement. We're adding to a program that we already know works. We are not creating a new bureaucracy. This is a long-range solution, a comprehensive program that will enable the state and local governments to make a continuing effort to enhance water quality throughout the state. As some of the members of this committee know, the residents of Anchorage expressed their grave concern regarding the quality of water in this community last fall by approving the sale of $15 million in sewer bonds and $10 million for various water quality projects. That was while they were turning down about $20 million worth of bonds for other projects. Many of the projects in the bond issue for water quality could not qualify for state matching funds under the existing law. Under this proposed amendment to Title 46, they would qualify. The bill before you is supported by both the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Municipality of Anchorage, as well as other groups within the Anchorage area, including the League of Women Voters, the Spinard Road Committee, the Anchorage Waterways Council, and other interested individuals. I'd like to point out that although House Bill 461 does have a zero fiscal note, in order to continue supplying grants the water supply, sewer, and solid waste disposal facility programs that already exist. Additional appropriations would have to be provided by the legislature for grants to be provided under this amendment. There is a companion bill on the Senate side. The sponsors of that bill have already said that they will do everything in their power to make sure that we are able to increase the funds going to DEC for these projects. I would submit that we will do the same thing on the House. In conclusion, I want to note, you will find in your packet letters from the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Municipality of Anchorage, and the Anchorage Waterways Council. They are all expressing their support of House Bill 461. Commissioner Ross is in the audience. He will be happy to testify to any technical aspects of the programs that you're interested in. Suzanne Trick is here from the Municipality of Anchorage. If you have any questions that you would like to direct to her, and I'll be happy to attempt to field any questions about the bill. I'd rather not talk about my divorce.
Oh, we will not have any questions on the latter subject. Just for the committee's information, you have the bill as introduced. Also, there is a committee substitute draft labeled Cook 22086, and that should be considered a series of potential amendments that will be discussed by Mr. Culp and other people. Commissioner Ross, I believe, will also discuss some. These, rather than having them typed separately, we put them on in this particular form. Representative, before, do you wish to comment on any of these particular amendments at this time, or do you wish to wait until they're introduced and discussed?
I'd rather wait until they're introduced and discussed.
Okay, that's fine. I'd prefer that, too. Are there questions of Representative Pierce? No. Thank you. If you would stand by, because I'm sure there will be questions as we go along. Yes, Robin. No questions about that. Commissioner.
I guess I should start off by saying that if you're in arrears and you shall support payments, you should not get a water quality permit. I don't know if we want to amend it to accomplish that. But
I think the record should reflect support of the other bill by environmental conservation.
My name is Bill Ross. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, and I speak in strong support of the bill that we have before you today. Preservation of water resources is of great concern to all Alaskans for public health, economic, recreational, and aesthetic reasons. As Representative Pierce talked about, recent monitoring done by the department indicated the need to reduce the pollutant count in several streams, lakes, and tributaries within the state, particularly in the Anchorage area. Following, I'd like to give you some examples of some actions and events that are backdrop to the intent of this bill. We did find high fecal coliform counts and other pollutants in Lower Campbell Creek and Fish Creek, and this did lead to the canceling of the Campbell Creek Classic Raft Race. Basically, at that point in time, the governor provided a $110,000 grant from his contingency fund, and the legislature followed up with a $200,000 grant to the municipality to do further testing in an attempt to ascertain the extent of the problem and to also start to work on some potential solutions. Basically, as Representative Pierce described, we have a combination of reasons as to why the Anchorage streams in particular are polluted. They include surface runoff problems that are what are known as non-point source. You cannot attribute them to any one particular outfall or outlet. We have deteriorating sewer lines that are breaking, leaking into groundwater that are coming back up through infiltration into the creeks. We have incorrectly connected sewers into the storm drainages that are going into the creeks instead of treatment plants as they should. And we have some point sources that we've been able to find, and indeed some corrective action has been taken on them, etc. So it's a broad range of things that cause these kind of problems. What is being proposed here is to expand the authority that we currently have to offer grants to municipalities for water, sewer, solid waste projects to include water quality enhancement facilities. If indeed we were to have this authority, some of the kinds of things that we could fund would be groundwater test wells, perhaps green belts or wetlands acquisitions, if indeed in the capital item you would consider land acquisition as being part of that facility. We could have oil and grease separators, which have worked well, particularly when you have fairly large areas that are being drained with non-point source runoff. If you essentially remove the pollutants before it enters a water body, perhaps laboratories and equipment to perform water quality testing, etc. These are the kinds of things that would fall under the definition of facilities. We have indeed provided a zero fiscal note because of two reasons. One is that to administer this type of grant would be no different than other grants that we already administer, and also because we do not have an independent source of funding that would automatically assume that projects like this would be funded. It would obviously come through the normal capital appropriation process, which either the governor proposing and the legislature accepting, or by the legislature initiating grants of this type that would be run through the department. Basically, we believe that the 50% grant program has been very successful in its history. It has been around since the early 1970s. In fact, during the 1970s, it was the primary source of water and sewer and solid waste construction in the state through bond issues that were floated. And it's only recently that we've had the direct grants that the legislature has appropriated to municipalities which have not had a matching requirement. The matching requirement provides not only ability for state and local dollars to work together to be stretched further to accomplish various objectives, it also puts in a sense of accountability. We have completed in our most sort of recent round of audits around $35 million worth of projects. We've audited and we've returned about $5 million to the state for other projects. So there is that notion that the project only costs what it costs, not what the grant was, which we believe is a good and sound public policy. Also, it enables the department then to participate in technical assistance. We have provided an awful lot of assistance to Anchorage in their leadership effort to get on top of this problem and through our construction grant side, and we're going to continue that effort on direct solutions to some of these problems. So we don't believe there would be any additional burden or staffing on us. It would be up to you all to provide the grants and for us to provide the structure and the technical assistance to implement these. So basically, to sum up, I would say that this is a very sound piece of legislation. It's obviously timely in terms of enabling us, from the state perspective, to help and assist in this problem, and it keeps the responsibility for fiscal accountability in y'all's hands in terms of whether or not you want to fund any specific projects. So I think that it's a good way to expand the authority to give us another tool to address the problem.
Commissioner, do you wish, before I open this up for questions, you basically testified on the bill itself. I would normally just ask if you wanted to entertain questions on the proposed amendments at this point, but since basically, as I understand it, Section 2 of the proposed amendments, that's page 1, lines 15 to 22, that's basically an amendment you're proposing, is it not?
We have, and let me just give a background to this, we have suggested that perhaps the legislature might want to consider a change to that part of the bill as we go through and talk about our authority under this. And I could give some background to that if you would like.
What I want to do is, and I'm sort of looking at you, Mr. Cold, as we do this here, although technically, of course, you don't offer an amendment either, the committee members are the people who do that. But since these amendments would be coming from you, if you would like us to consider these amendments or any of them, I would urge you here now to discuss them. But I guess before we start on that, I would ask, is there any question from any member of the committee to the commissioner on any of his testimony thus far? Okay. Yes, Representative Taylor.
This bill appears to me to be generic and not focused just on Anchorage problems.
It is generic for statewide. It has been, the origin has come from the more dramatic example of the pollution in there. There are other instances, for example, Lake Lucille up in the Wasilla area is also showing signs of long-term non-point source pollution being an eligible area. I would say that we have similar kinds of problems as we have in Anchorage and Ketchikan on the basis of not having adequate soils for on-site disposal, and yet we have a lot of on-site disposal. We're starting to pick up problems of surface water contamination. Juneau has wetlands, streams that are being impacted in the same manner. I think that the problem exists around the state.
Mm-hmm. The other question I had was the your Section 2. By this
I would ask you to hold that particular question until he's had a chance to explain Section 2.
Explain Section 2 then.
Okay, please.
Okay. Section 2, which would eliminate the prohibition for the use of the grant program for replacement. Now, as I understand it, and I think that this is an accurate statement of the logic behind it, when this section was originally drafted, the state did not want to get into the business of being responsible for replacing systems that it may have already constructed once with the grant program or which may have been constructed by other sources of funds. The purpose behind that is a very solid one, that any time any capital item is constructed, that the entity that then owns, operates, etc., that facility should be responsible for its operating and maintenance, which would include providing for a way of amortizing the eventual replacement of that particular facility. What has occurred, however, is that in the onset of direct grants, that various legislative grants have been made to municipalities in the 100% category for replacement. So instead of being a way of minimizing the state's responsibility for replacement, if indeed a municipality wanted to get funds for replacement, the only way that they could get it from the legislature would be to get a 100% grant. So therefore, we've really sort of defeated the purpose, because without being able to say that there will be no direct grants for replacement, we've had all of the replacement grants be 100% grants. So this is not going to fix the overall problem, but it merely provides an avenue to make sure that the problem is only a 50% problem when it's run through the department. Now, I realize that that's not necessarily the most sound public policy, but as long as we have direct grants that are coming from the legislature to municipalities that do not use the 50% program, then it is indeed the case that replacement grants will always be funded at the 100% level to the extent that the legislature funds them at all. And so I'm merely saying that if we had the ability to do a replacement under this program, you and we could at least argue that we should only pay 50% of them instead of having that particular legislator provide, if they so chose for their community, a 100% grant. That's the purpose of it. I'm not here to say that, you know, anybody should fall on their sword over this, but it does raise the question of the direct grants and their purpose, so to speak, when we have a 50% match program. And we have, and I believe Gary might have a copy with him, it's interesting to see the ratio of 50% grants that have come through the department over the 70s and basically have stayed fairly consistent until the last few years. We have dropped off dramatically, whereas last year we got about $1 million coming through the 50% grant program. And direct grants, which are 100%, going directly to the municipalities with no accountability to the department administration, have shot up. And, I mean, there was $150 million of them one year when we got $20 million. So there has been a tendency in the recent time to go to these direct grants and to not use this program, one that I think does not reflect, you know, the realities of declining revenues at this point in time, for sure, and also does not provide the sense of accountability that this program has still had built into it since day one. So I think there's some sound public policy reasons to talk about using the 50% grant program. That's why I brought up perhaps a replacement should be added so that to the extent the state is funding.
Testimony you just gave indicates that we would only replace if we did so at 100%. Isn't this piece of statute a prohibition against replacement?
It's a prohibition of replacement through the Department of Environmental Conservation's 50% grant program. It is not a prohibition through 100% direct grant through the Department of Administration.
In other words, if we've once built a project, and that's basically what it says, then that project shall not be available for replacement.
Through our program.
Right.
But it's still available for replacement through a direct grant.
To a municipality who decides to do it.
That's right.
And that's how we've been getting around this public policy statement in here that said we weren't going to be replacing these things. After we'd once built them, it was the duty and obligation of the municipality to replace them. Now we've gone full circle and we're coming back around, and now we build them once, and now we're going to build them all again, right?
And it may be, I don't know, I defer to Gary on this, we may have actually built something at the 50% rate in the 70s or something and replacing it at the 100% rate through a direct grant. I don't know if we have an example of that, but it's theoretically possible.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. The other question I had to begin with on this thing is, it appears as though the department wishes to get into the question of construction, financing, right-of-way acquisition, etc. Your department. I thought that was normally done through DOT, not DEC.
Yeah, at this point, we would not be changing that wording, that which in effect prohibits us from, that wording would remain the same. Eligible costs include, but do not include the cost of interest financing and right-of-way acquisition. So we would retain that prohibition on the department being able to fund those kinds of costs related to operation, okay, maintenance, or repair.
Okay. So you're still not going to, you're not going to get into the right-of-way acquisition problem and that sort of stuff. Good.
Other questions? I gather that that's the only portion of this that is really yours.
That is the one in which we have initiated whatever discussion or dialogue the committee would like to have on that item.
Okay, I have a concern, and it's something that I've expressed to you before the meeting, and I believe I've also expressed this to Representative Pierce. And that is, I think the results of this, I think, yeah, Representative Taylor needs to sign off on this. And that is that if, in fact, municipalities are able to get replacement through this program, they may let the projects go and, in fact, not repair them, just on the hope that they will then be replaced. And it seems to me, if you've got the authority to replace, you should also have the authority to provide a grant to repair or possibly maintain. I don't know if anything, my logic hasn't carried me any farther than that, but at least for the purpose of repair or maintain, well, let's say repair first, and then the second question would be maintain.
Well, let me say it this way. You may very well be right that your logic would cause that to occur. I would not dispute that. However, I would say that if we had a definition of regulation as to what replacement was, as opposed to repair and maintenance, that we would certainly not fund the repair and maintenance grants that might besiege us, so to speak, under the guise of replacement. It's also the case that, and I don't anticipate the capital budget working any differently than it has in the past 3 or 4 years, that you all would be the ones that would get besieged, so to speak, with these grant requests, right? Because we do not have an independent source of funding. We get what we get through the governor's budget or through the legislature's capital budget. And it would behoove you to say, no, we're not going to fund that. If we did not have that authority to fund it, you would have an easy way to say, no, I do not fund repair and maintenance. But if we had that authority, then you would get besieged by it. There's no doubt in my mind that every municipality that had a budget crunch would come to you and say, we need $50,000 so that we can do our annual maintenance on our whatever. And it would, you know, what would you say if you were approached by that?
Well,
that's how we got into this problem in the first place. Some legislators obviously have said in the past, yes, I'll go get you a direct grant to replace something. And would some people say, yes, I'll go get you a grant to repair and maintain something? That's obviously the policy problem that we have here. Representative Taylor was accurate. There is no prohibition on replacement in state statutes. There's just a prohibition of using the program.
Do you feel it would be at all beneficial to also, since you're eliminating the prohibition against replacement, to eliminate the prohibition against repairs, for example?
Well, I would say that it would not be good to do that. I think that it is far more clear-cut to talk about what replacement actually looks like and to make a judgment as to whether or not that replacement is on the basis of shoddy maintenance or really is on the basis of it has outgrown its usefulness in some understandable manner. For example, we still have some wood stave water distribution system in this state, and we are unable to replace them with this grant program, with a modern distribution system, because it is indeed a replacement of an existing system. So those kinds of determinations are much easier to make than the normal repair and maintenance that's associated with the everyday operation of a facility of this type.
Do you see any advantage in doing any other language change or in this particular subsection or anything other than I don't want you to feel you're limited to a
no.
one-word thing.
No, I would say that, and I want the committee to know I'm bringing this up as an item of discussion, as opposed to something that I necessarily think that we should do. It doesn't make any sense to me to fund replacement of 100%. I'm not saying the converse is therefore we should legitimize funding it at 50%. It may be that we just want to raise this and let it go as it currently is. It may be that we want to put it in and have, I don't know what's the next committee of referral, whether we want
resources.
Resources have a discussion. That would be up to the committee, and I would defer to your judgment as to how far you want to take any discussion of this issue.
Representative, I'm sorry, yes.
I was just wondering on what is the, essentially you're saying replacement is the construction of a new system in place of an old one. I thought it might mean the replacement of at least components or parts. I'm thinking of, for example, in case of flood or other damage, you might have to replace a pump station or something like that, which is actually a major repair when you're looking at the entire system. What's the, you know, where do we differentiate between major repairs and replacement?
If I could, I would defer to Gary to answer that one. He has more technical. This is Gary Hayden. He's the director of the Division of Facility Construction and Operation.
Mr. Hayden, would you like to come up in? I don't know if you have anything prepared testimony, but please, whatever you gentlemen would like here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have anything prepared. And just to give an example of what we have considered as replacement in the past and where we have been unable to give grants, in several communities, as the Commissioner mentioned, we have Woodstave Pike, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, Unalaska, very old systems that the community wanted to replace because they were leaking like sieves and it was costing a lot of money to pump the water through those leaky pipes. We have been unable to give them a direct, a 50% match, and we have seen them go and receive 100% funding. And so we were looking at major capital expenditures versus routine maintenance and repair systems where a pump station was flooded or a piece of equipment just wore out that the community should have been maintaining a reserve of funds through their user fee schedule to pay for a routine replacement repair type of maintenance item.
We are called upon to make these judgments quite frequently on the basis of legislative inquiry. You know, can we run this through, that kind of thing? And I believe that we could, in a very straightforward way, promulgate a regulation which defined replacement as opposed to repair and maintenance, which we then all could use. This would, again, not constrain the legislature's ability to provide a direct grant to do anything. It merely talks about whether or not the 50% grant program is available for certain kinds of projects. Hence, if a community came and as Representative Copeland said, and said, we've got to repair or replace on the basis of this kind of damage, and if we said, we do not believe that the amendment was to accomplish that kind of utilization, but there, you still believe it was sound public policy and you convince your colleagues accordingly, then a direct grant would be available to do that. The question is whether or not we want to make this program available for the kinds of replacement activities that I think we could all agree are out there and are currently not being able to be used by us and hence go for 100%.
Representative Pierce, would you like to join us up here for a moment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just thinking about the dialogue and the conversation that's going on here and thinking perhaps about one of the problems that surfaced last year in the form of polluted water in Anchorage. I had a couple of questions. How close do we come to defining the source of the problem with the grants that already have been appropriated to Anchorage? And then also thinking about the testimony and Representative Pierce's testimony in which she says that it's probably caused from a combination of things, and one of those is existing sewer lines beneath some of the streams. So I guess thinking about what you're saying about replacement and indeed probably to solve that problem, thinking about our resident sewer expert, Representative Jenkins, who has had much experience in this line, that maybe indeed that is...
Shall we tell that to Roger?
I tell him that all the time.
Is that the quote of the week?
But that may be what we need to do. We may need to replace something, or we may need to repair that if we're going to clean up those streams, you know, Campbell Creek or whatever, because of these, or Fish Creek. I think testimony in Anchorage has been that we could clean out those creeks and we have volunteers doing this, but until we do something with the sewer pipes that are leaking into them, you know, we're not accomplishing a whole lot.
I would have to defer primarily to the municipality to talk about where they are at.
We're at in defining their,
but let me give you my understanding of the situation, which is that they have canvassed those major water body areas and found the geographical distribution of the pollution, and in some instances have traced it to a particular source or have made a determination that there is no one source that is the culprit, but it is this variety of things. What they have not done is, and we'll start again in the spring, is to complete that canvas to go on up, for example, to make any connections, if there are any, between some of the subdivision problems and the stream problems. Okay. There may be some connections there. Those have not been established, nor have some of the larger point sources or geographic sources, like, for example, the zoo, the exact cause of that relationship to water pollution has not been established. But I think what they have is a good idea of how polluted certain areas are and some idea of where those causes are, and then would continue to do that. And there is sufficient funds left in those grants to do that. They are not short of money. They just, the timing is such that they have not finished that work. Now, we have been prevented from participating in the replacement exercises that they have identified that you've spoken about, and the bond issue that Representative Pierce talked about will have some money that will go to those kinds of things, and there will not be any state participation in that. And again, the public policy question does have to do, and the reason we're all here, what is the state's role in providing solutions to these problems? And at this point, the DEC program does not have a role in replacement.
Other questions? Thank you. And that'll go ahead. Keith Colt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Colt from the Alaska Environmental Lobby, representing 20 conservation groups throughout the state. We'd like to commend Representative Pierce for sponsoring House Bill 461. We feel that the bill does take a significant step towards solving or preventing serious water quality problems in Alaska. The 50-50 match program offers a flexible vehicle for improving water quality with local involvement and no irresponsible state fiscal commitments. By allowing preventive measures such as greenbelt acquisition, this bill will help save the costs of future cleanup and restoration efforts. We would further concur with the suggestion of the Anchorage Waterways Council that the cost for research, testing, education, enforcement, and cleanup should also be eligible for funding under this program. The Waterways Council correctly notes that our water quality problems cannot be solved solely by the construction of facilities. Last year's events in Anchorage clearly demonstrate that a successful solution to the stream pollution problem requires the program components mentioned above. Research and testing to correctly target the problem, enforcement to force compliance from violators, cleanup to deal with litter and other pollutants, and education to inform citizens about the magnitude of the problem and their individual role in solving it. This last component, education, we feel cannot be overemphasized. It seems to me that when it comes to dispersed sources of stream pollution, Fogo's adage applies, we have met the enemy and it is us to some extent. It'll take individual action as well as capital investment to do the job. To bring these concepts home, the Waterways Council notes that last year's critical legislative appropriation to the municipality of Anchorage for pollution detection, they believe, and we concur, could not have been funded through the grant program authorized by the current version of this bill. For these reasons, the lobby would support the amendments offered by the council, and I believe present in this draft that is circulating. And we share the council's desire to see the bill strengthened through these amendments, which would make the cost of testing, research, education, enforcement, and cleanup eligible for funding. Well, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Representative Pierce, did you have any questions or comments on any of the proposed amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I only have a concern, and I guess I'd like to state it for the record. I, too, think that education is very important on all levels, but we need to educate the people if they are causing the problem themselves. I want us to make sure that we're not, I don't want us to have a grant program that can be used as a replacement vehicle if and when we have to make some cuts to the state's operating budget. And I want that in the record. I don't expect to see things just kind of move from an operating budget over into a grant program, even if the city's willing, whatever municipality is willing to pay half.
I would like to see as much of the money used to actually clean up the problems that we find we already have in whatever way we can. I guess first isn't fair, but certainly foremost. And definitely work with the people of all the communities to let them know what it is that they're doing. I can remember having lived in the Midwest and living in Louisville, Kentucky for quite some time and working at the zoo. I know that we did some determination of some of the things that were being put into the stream there in Louisville and had to do some things back. It was an education process for all of us. And I also know that in farm areas, all the people have found out in the past 15 or 20 years that they've been putting a whole bunch of things into streams and their own drinking water that they wouldn't. I don't know how we all managed to be so healthy. But I guess my only concern is that we do not make a transfer somewhere down the line.
Representative Copeland?
Yes, in light of Representative Hirsch's comments, I wonder if the commissioner would remark upon that, the Waterways Council proposed amendment, and especially the department's ability to control the amount or the priority of such grants within the regulation. Or how would this affect your budgeting?
Right. I would think I would support the amendments in that they give us the flexibility to address the problem. I would concur with Representative Pierce that the purpose of these grant programs is to solve problems. We have more efficient vehicles for moving money into operating budgets to the extent that there are those kinds of tasks, and we also have different mechanisms, so to speak, for supporting municipalities, et cetera, than through the capital budget. The way in which there will be control on this, I think, will be that to the extent that any municipality puts on their capital budget item list some program as opposed to a facility, there will be ample room to debate that both at the local level and then with the appropriate representative, the senator, as well as the governor, as to that's really a high priority and if that's really going to address the problem. If we had, I would be more concerned, so to speak, from a structural point of view, if we had a pot of money that we established priorities from. We did have that from the bond. We had that for a while when we got lump sum appropriations, but the capital budget process has now moved to one of named projects that are sponsored by the governor or by the legislature, and I'm in complete support with that. I think that's an appropriate way to develop the capital budget. I don't have a problem with that. So I don't think there's a problem that this is going to become some sleight of hand maneuver. I think all of us will be involved in deciding whether or not this is indeed a good project and whether or not this is going to bump something else off some community capital budget item list, because it's going to be. There's only so much money.
Other questions? I have a couple if there aren't. First of all, is there a particular reason, and the members of the committee have heard me mention this before, I have a problem with just putting effective dates on when you don't need it, because it requires a higher number of votes to pass, and it just, a lot of times people just put it on without really thinking about it. Is there a reason why you need to have an effective date clause on this? Okay. At the appropriate time, I would move to strike the effective date clause at the title accordingly.